Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Pure Nintendo Podcast. This is your weekly dose of all things Nintendo, and I am your host, Gemma. With me this week is my very good friend and colleague, Kirk. Welcome back, Kirk.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
Hi, and welcome back. And how are you this week?
Everything's good.
Everything's good. How about you? Nice. Yeah. All good. We have a lot to talk about today. So I'm very excited. We've got a pretty solid list of things to talk about, from an update on some games we've been playing, some reviews, a demo, and an interview with the great team over in Chrome Studios, who are responsible for the Tasmanian Tiger series. So before we get to that, I did want to revisit something we talked about briefly last week. It was covered in the Nintendo Direct that we covered. And it's F-Zero 99, and I promised that I would try it and I'd come back and give you my thoughts on it. Have you had a chance at it yet, Kirk?
I did not. I think that's mainly because I didn't play the original, so I don't have the attachment to it. Giving me 99 of whatever it was beforehand now seems like a bit of overkill. So
yeah, so it's, well, that's okay. It's a lot. 99 is a lot. I do love these. What do you call these online collection series throwbacks? Remixes almost, really, aren't they? With the Pac-Man and Tetris and now F-Zero.
I love the idea. Maybe eventually I'll hop on it. Or should I do the original first? Is it on Nintendo Online, the original F-Zero?
Probably. I should know that, shouldn't I? I, like you, I'm not actually a huge F-Zero fan. I've played it, but it wasn't like, I think I said last week, if I'm going to play a racing game, I'm probably going to play Mario Kart. Traditionally, I am terrible at racing games, like horrible at them. So, But Mario Kart is the exception, which is why I think I love it so much. It's so much fun and I'm actually half decent at it. But I have tried F-Zero. It is a fun, and certainly a good looking game. It's sort of a space based, like a sci-fi kind of racer where you're almost, I think you're a hovercraft, actually. You look like a hovercraft. I don't know if you are a hovercraft. But I did jump in and download F-Zero 99. And I really liked the way they introduced it, because you don't just jump in to 99 player races, which I think might be a little daunting if you haven't played F-Zero before. They start you off with just yourself, just to teach you the kind of moves, because it is a little bit different to something like Mario Kart. You can boost and you have to recharge, you know, you can't just run out of energy or you kind of explode. So it takes you through a very quick tutorial, which is really, really nice and easy. And then it pits you against some AI. I think you do maybe 10 or something first, and then maybe it's 20, I can't remember. Anyway, and then you move up to like 20 and 50, and that's all like AI computers, you know, CPUs. And then when you beat them, you get to do the 99 races. And so I did all that and I got to the 99 races and I actually did pretty well. I was surprised, having said I'm terrible at driving games. It's pretty fun. I don't know how much I'll play it, but I did enjoy it. And I had maybe three 99 races, like three races with 99 people. And I won one of them. I was like, wow, that's cool. The secret, listeners, is if you can get in front at the start and stay in front, it's much easier, because when you're in the midst, it starts off, Kirk, you probably saw the trailer. It starts off like really wide, you know, so all 99 races are all lined up against each other, you know, so it's a very, very wide path, but that's just the very beginning. And then it narrows down and suddenly you can only fit maybe five across. So you're all bumping into each other. And it's really chaotic. And of course, when you bump into somebody, you lose energy. And as I said, you explode when your energy is too low. So you don't want to explode. You don't want to do that.
Okay. So you can't purposely bump people out of your way, because you can damage yourself too.
Well, yes, exactly. You can, but you will also lose energy. So there is a move you can do, which is like a tumble roll kind of thing, which kind of protects you for a moment and you can push people around. So there is that option. So there's a few, it's deeper than I expected. So yeah, it's good fun. I'd say it's worth a try for sure. If you have Nintendo Switch Online, it's free anyway. So jump in. I think they have some sort of tournament. I think it was a very long, no, maybe I'm thinking of a different game. I don't know how long the period of time was that you can compete and try to win in the tournament, but yeah, it's on at the moment. So give it a go. So that's kind of my time with F-Zero 99.
Is it more skill-based? Like, the more you play it, the better you're going to get it? Or is it just kind of like random luck and you just got to hope that you're in the right position and that, you know, you're able to shove people out of the way as necessary?
That's a good question. I'd like to say skill-based, but then I have not played it very much at all, and yet I won one race. So maybe just luck. I think it's a bit of both, honestly. I think doing the tutorial helped and I did pick up the moves, and maybe I'm a better player now than I was when F-Zero was first a thing, because yeah, I was terrible back then. And so there's a bit of skill, but then yeah, certainly some luck if you can avoid all the other crazy races. Is that a show, Crazy Races? Is that a...
Maybe. I guess as not much of a racing fan, I don't know what's out there and what isn't.
Oh, okay. No, I was thinking of that show with the Hanna-Barbera cartoons. Isn't that called Crazy Races?
Oh, yeah. Boy, what was it? Did they have one of that? I know they had Laugh Olympics.
Oh, okay. I don't know. They were all in these dust. There was like Dastardly with his dog, and they used to hit each other with weapons and things. Anyway, sorry, segue or side note. Yeah. So I'd say both skill and luck required in this instance. Okay. Yes. But it's good fun. It is good fun. Good, crazy fun. And, you know, races are very quick. I think you do 3 or 4 laps of each circuit that you're thrust into. So it's over very, very quickly. And if you explode, you're out of the race, basically. So, yeah, you definitely don't want to do that. I'll reiterate again. don't explode. Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is it's not just hitting other racers. It's also hitting the boundary of your track, like the edge. If you hit that, you also lose energy, so you can't even hit the sides, which, you know, it's hard. Steering is not necessarily easy, especially if you're being thrust back and forth by other players. But you can boost, you can do this roll, and you can recharge your energy once per lap. There's a little kind of area that you can drive into, like a, I think they call it a pit stop, actually. It's not a pit stop. You don't stop. You just drive through it, and your energy will recharge as long as you're in that area. Of course, everyone's in that area, so you also bump into people. So, yeah, when you get – I think you collect these little – I don't know what they are – energy charges that fill this other meter. And when that's full, you would have seen in the trailer also, you can go on top of the road and there's like a special blue lane for you. It's not just for you. Anyone else who has filled their meter will also be up there. But it is much less chaotic, and you kind of miss all the mess below, so that helps as well, and that's pretty fun.
Yeah, you've made it sound more interesting to me than I think the bit in the Nintendo Direct did. So yeah, maybe now I will grab it and see what happens.
Give it a go. You can let me know next week if you agree or not. Yeah, and I wonder if Justin tried it, because he was a bit disappointed that it wasn't the other version of F-Zero.
Yeah.
So anyway, I did want to ask you, and we kind of talked about this before the show, which I was surprised to hear you don't know who Bluey is. Bluey, the dog.
I don't. I saw the press release on this and I didn't move on it. And I think in my mind it was like just an offshoot of Blue's Clues. Like maybe now he has a kid and just named Bluey. So, you know, dogs and blue, and that's what came to mind. I did not know this was an entirely different thing.
Yes, it is. It's probably been around maybe 5 or so years now. So it's a cartoon series, if listeners have not heard of Bluey. It's an Australian made. It's actually made in Brisbane, my hometown. So it's made right where I live and set where I live as well. So when I when I watch it with my kids, I can see they actually have iconic Brisbane kind of scenery in the background. And my building that I work in the city has an interesting shape, like a unique shape, and they have it in the background. So I can see where I work in Bluey. It's kind of cool. So, yeah.
Maybe there'll be an episode where you're waving out the window or
yes,
hang a sign outside and see if they work it in.
I'd love that. Yes. So, I mean, I think I said to you, it's a bit like Peppa Pig. In a sense, it's probably a little more than Peppa Pig, in that Peppa Pig is sort of 4 or 5 minute episodes. These are 7 minute episodes. They're a little bit longer, a little bit more tongue in cheek, funny for adults, I think, than Peppa. So I get quite some enjoyment out of watching it as well. And that could be because it's so Australian. There's a lot of very classic, you know, typical Australian sort of sayings and, you know, activities. And then there's just some unique stuff that they make up. And the premise of the show is that it's a family. There's two parents, two kids. Bluey is a girl and she has a sister called Bingo. And the parents are always playing games with the kids and they're always very, very funny. They have very good imaginations. The writers do a really, really good job. So anyway, the point of this story is that there is a Bluey video game coming out in November, which is the press release that you're alluding to. So yes, it's a game that's coming out November 17th. And I mean, I'm surprised I haven't done one sooner because, you know, Disney, the actual studio, has picked up the animated series of Bluey and it's now on Disney Plus. And I've heard it's doing very well overseas. And I know you haven't heard of it, but that's okay. You're not the target audience. I just thought it was some exciting news for fans of Bluey. And yeah, it'd be interesting to see how it goes. It looks like it's voiced from the trailer. The voices look like they're from the show, which is cool because they're pretty, you know, it's pretty well voiced. They're very good characters and very good voice actors. And it looks like it's sort of a story mode where you play, I guess, an interactive episode of the show, but it's all new episodes. So it's not just taking something that exists. It's, you know, creating a new story for the game, which is interesting. So it's a multiplayer game. It's four player. You can choose any one of the family members. Yeah. So I thought that would be something noteworthy. I'm surprised you haven't heard of it. I really thought everyone knew who Bluey was, but I think it's just because it's from Brisbane.
it could be that. It could be that I don't have Disney Plus. So if that's where it's being promoted and my youngest is 12, just turned 12. Is that beyond the age range or is he on the fringe? Is he
probably beyond? Like my 12-year-old doesn't enjoy it anymore because he thinks he's too cool for it. My 10-year-old still does, but it's probably aimed more at 4 to 6 to 8 kind of thing. Like it's probably in that range. Okay. Yeah. But as I said, it's a lot of adults. We all know it here because it's a thing. This company's sort of grown from nothing and become this huge animation studio based on this show that's really popular. And so we all talk about it. And because we have kids who are younger when it started, like Hayden was probably about 6 when it started. So we got into it and now I have a niece who's 4. So she loves it. And we watch it as adults and just laugh. And it's like, it gives you ideas. It actually makes you feel sometimes a little bit inadequate as a parent because those parents in the show are just always doing stuff with the kids. Oh. And you're like, oh man, I should be more like those parents. They're really good.
It's some pretty difficult standards they set up for us. Or the kids do something wrong and the parents never lose their cool and they never panic and yell. It's always, well, we'll make this a learning moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. All right.
But yes, November 17th for that one. And for me, it's just been a big kind of time in Australia for gaming just because PAX is coming up. So I'm going to PAX Australia in, when is that? It's October the 6th. So it's coming up very soon. I'll be down in Melbourne. Sorry?
I'll say, in about a week or two.
Yeah. So that's coming up quickly. And I've been talking to developers who will be there. So I've got some interviews lined up. I'm really excited to meet them. And there's a lot of Australian content, obviously. Bluey is Australian. And I also, during the week, had the opportunity to interview Chrome Studios, which is another Brisbane-based studio. And they are responsible for the series Tyre, the Tasmanian Tiger, which has been kicking around for over 20 years now. And Tyre 4 is coming out on the Switch, this week, I think, the 26th of September, if I'm right. So I had a chance to catch up with George and Steve. We'll pause now and go to that interview and then we'll come back and finish off the rest of the show. Thank you so much for your time today. And I really just wanted to start by asking you about Chrome, the company itself, and its history. Like, what's your background? How did you come together to begin developing games?
Well, the legends tell of these guys who were working on this bodyboarding game from two different companies.
Right.
And they thought, hey, this has worked out really good. We should join together. And this was like 1999. And that was us forming Chrome.
It was cool. Well,
let's work together. And because like we got a business guy and we got these other guys who make games. Let's get together. And that was how Chrome was born.
Awesome.
It was that simple. It was like,
yeah. Does the name mean something, Chrome?
No, it was like a cat. I had an idea for a character called Chrome, like a robotic platformy game character. And I just like the spelling was K-R-O-M-E.
Yeah. So
we wanted it because this is like 2000s internet names trying to find something that's a word that's, you know.
Yes.
It's like, K-R-O-M-E.
Yes.
It's like shiny Chrome, but it's not Chrome.
Yeah.
It just sort of worked.
Cool. Okay.
No one had any better ideas, so we stuck with the worst.
And George, have you been around? So you two have been together since the late 90s, like doing work together like this? Yeah.
We've been brothers since 1973.
Okay. Oh, you guys are brothers? Awesome. Okay. Yeah.
No, George did some work on one of the first games we did, and he was off doing his other stuff. And then we formed Chrome, said we were looking for an audio guy, and basically I said, well, I got a brother who does it.
Yeah.
And, That was as far as I got on it. It wasn't like any nepotism stuff. It's just like, yeah, my brother does audio. You want to give him a go. It's like, okay.
And cool. Yeah. That's awesome. And like 20 plus years later, obviously it's working well. So.
I'm sure George has more to add to it though.
Yeah, feel free to add something to that, George, if you like.
No, that's pretty much, it's far less waffly than I would have come up with. So.
Do you let the music do the talking for you usually?
No. Just... you know, there's games have all these different elements. There's the art, there's the design, there's the programming, and there's the audio. So I tend to confine myself just to the audio part of it.
Yeah.
Because that's my thing. Whereas for all the other stuff, leave it to people like Steve.
Yeah, cool. How big is the team?
I get to all the work. Yeah.
How big is the team at Chrome?
Currently, I think it's a couple of dozen, about three dozen currently. Yeah. Across different projects and stuff. The guys, us on Ty 4 was maybe, what, about a half dozen? Am I guessing that right or wrong?
Yeah, cool. Speaking of Ty, I mean, this character, as far as I know, he's been around since about the year 2000, the actual concept of Ty, the Tasmanian Tiger. Yes. And but the first game came out in 2002.
Well, we did need time to make it.
Yes, of course.
But what happened was, like, end of 2000, Robert came back from overseas and had a friend who was at Sony, like a producer who was doing, he goes, yeah, Sony's doing all these, looking at doing all these platform games. And like, we had wanted to do one for ages, like mm-hmm. a character platform, like, yeah, because I'm a big fan of Banjo-Kazooie and Mario at the time.
Yeah.
You know, this is like the 2000s, so we haven't had all the news, the stuff that you think of as PlayStation 2 titles and GameCube. None of that stuff existed.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just like there was Ridge Racer and a couple of games like on the PlayStation 2, and it's like, oh, that's the cool new stuff. So we were sitting around the what we call it the blue room. It was basically a couple of blue couches in the office area, and we're just sort of like, oh, you know, we've always wanted to do that. As a group of us going, well,
yeah,
we should do that. And then the weird thing was it should be an Australian critter. Because, you know, we were talking about Crash Bandicoot. It's like,
that
is so un-Australian. You wouldn't know. If you didn't know what a bandicoot was, you wouldn't know that it was an Australian animal. Mm-hmm. We were like, we should do a Tasmanian tiger. And it was just this unanimous, yep, there was no question about it. One of the other artists came up with the idea of using boomerangs as the weapon.
Yeah, cool.
And we were like, oh, that's genius.
Yeah.
we all went with it. It was just one of these things. Everyone was throwing ideas in.
Yeah.
And they all just this big melting pot of, you know, cool Australianisms.
Yeah.
And it just sort of, they all fit together because we all had this, a lot of it's the same history, roughly. We're roughly the same ages and stuff. So we had all that sort of cultural history of stuff. And another thing with Ty was that the games we did before that were much more, we're international. We don't have to be Australian. There's that cultural cringe thing. When we, and with Ty, I was like, no, we're going to be Australian. We're going to really lean into all the stuff that sort of makes us Aussie and stuff.
Totally.
And the funny thing is the American guys at EA were like, no, more Australian. We need more Australian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're loving it. So we made that like our mission in life to just convert American kids to speaking Australian and non-Australian stuff.
Yeah. That's cool.
I don't think we realize what we've got. As far as what stuff is. Like I was walking this morning, it's like, oh, look, there's a sulfur-crested cockatoo flying around and there's a flock of ibis and there's four or five galahs sitting on the park next door going feeding. It's like, okay, yeah, we just got to sit and watch a bit more, I think.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree. How do you think Ty has sort of changed over the years since that initial concept of we're going to do a Tasmanian tiger and he's this sort of character? Has he evolved over time?
Yeah, he has. There's been some really major changes in Ty. He changes his shorts every game.
Yeah.
That was like the big change. We try and keep his personality the same, right?
Yeah.
He's a really happy-go-lucky sort of. He's kind of a surfery guy, but not a surfer dude, if you know what I mean. He's like, he's going up there and he's ready to get there, runs around barefoot on the beach. He's that kind of guy. But he does help his mates out and stuff. We always try and keep that. So even if whatever story we chuck at him or thing, it's that guy reacting to whatever that situation is, which I think makes him interesting. Mm-hmm. He's getting a little smarter over the, like, not he was dumb, but he's sort of, yeah, okay, I don't trust you as much, like Lenny the Lyrebird. These characters, he just knows they're doing bad stuff.
Yeah.
So he's sort of picking up on that stuff. He did learn to drive in one of the games.
Cool.
Which is a big stuff because Shaz always drove him around previously. but yeah, the joke is because I just changed his shorts mostly to give him something new to look at. There was design things. We do new things with the models and in game, adding game mechanics and just the way we render the characters and all that stuff. So that would always progress every game. But cloth technology. So we gave him a scarf running around in one of the games, and he's got different abilities, the different boomerangs. That sort of stuff, or game stuff, always changed and try to advance that as we went along.
Yeah.
But the character is this nice guy helping his friends out, trying to do the right thing.
Awesome. Yeah. I love that. It's like the classic Australian mate kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Brilliant. Thank you. What sort of inspired you, apart from them saying, be more Australian, and you wanting to make sort of a Crash Bandicoot game that was actually Australian? How did you get inspiration for the settings and characters? Like, what inspired you?
When I was a kid, about 12, I did a week's stay up at Mount Isa on a back cattle farm.
Cool.
Like an exchange student thing. They went up for the week and those guys came down the week after. But we're up there and the first day we got in the back of the Toyota Land Cruiser, the ute. We were driving around checking all the fences for the cattle. Right, where the dad is fixing up the fences, and we were dodging termite mounds, just driving there. We're sitting in the back of the car. Like, that was an inspiration for some of the Thai level stuff. It was literally like we had the big outback stuff. Like, yeah, I want to drive around the back of the ute and I want to dodge the termite mounds. Like, and I think everyone added to that too. There was just the rest of the team would come up with one guy like particularly like the rainbow eucalyptus trees. So we wanted to put that in there. Poinciana in another game. So we just. The flora and fauna were always like, oh, I love this thing. Hit the beaches and what kind of animals we have on the beaches. And yeah, it was just all stuff that I think we'd all grown up with. And it's just people like going, oh, we can talk about this stuff and show off the stuff that we have fond memories of. And I think that just came from the whole team.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think it's like you said earlier, just we sometimes take that for granted. Like we don't notice it until we sit and look for it sometimes. Yeah. Or when you talk about it as a group, I guess, and you start spitballing ideas, it all comes out.
Yeah, like people will be walking around going, okay, well, there's this thing there and that thing. Or there's a carpet snake. You don't really think twice about it, right? But then for people who don't experience that, it's like, oh, there's a carpet snake or a huntsman spider. It's like we put this giant huntsman in the game. It's like, well, yeah, they're just spiders. People freak out over that sort of stuff. It's like,
oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Big cockroaches, big spiders. Like, well, yeah, that's what it's like.
That's reality.
A bit bigger than the real thing, but yeah.
Yes, still. That's, what is it? Poetic license kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
What sort of reaction have you had from, I guess, overseas kind of customers and clients and representatives? Have they enjoyed that? I mean, I know they've enjoyed it, but have they, what sort of questions do you get? Like, is this real? Like the spiders? I mean, how do they react?
No, they laugh it up. Like, I think from audiences that are used to like, yes, well, there is this guy and he flies down with a Wookiee in a spaceship. Like, the weird stuff is it's not the odd stuff. It's like, oh, where does Ty's boomerang go? It's like, it's an animal running around on two legs and wearing shorts and you're worried about sort of physics stuff. They love it. There's the one that always comes up is, why is there snow in Australia? I didn't think there was snow in Australia. So people learn it's like the snowy mountains. Like, yeah, we're a big country. We've got lots of stuff.
Yep.
So that was an eye-opener for a lot of people when we had stuff like that. And we were, oh, okay, true. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So I think that people were like, a lot of people liked learning about Australia, which is really cool. Like, you know, oh, I didn't know that this and there's this thing. And they love the language stuff, obviously. That was always just you throw stuff in there that's like really thick accent stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing. But like, you view it's like, yeah, it's okay. Some people say it a lot, but
yeah, exactly.
They love it. It's just playing up on that stuff.
Yeah.
Around the world, it's got a lot of people interested in Australia, which is great.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's like what Crocodile Dundee did in the 80s kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That opens their eyes to what's there, I think. Because mm-hmm. They don't see it that way a lot of the time. And a lot of time Australia is like some guy with a South African accent running around like, oh, okay. It's like, no, there's more to it than that. There's lots of cool stuff. Big country, lots of things to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose leading on from that, I was thinking about the Tasmanian tiger itself because we all know that it's extinct and has been for, I think, 100 years or so. I don't know if overseas people know that, but, how did you – I mean, you sort of mentioned him earlier as he just came up as an idea, but was there a specific reason or do you have any kind of attachment to that animal itself?
I just always thought when I was younger, I always thought they were a cool, interesting animal because just the name Tasmanian tiger. I think – late 90s Cascade Brews are starting to do their stuff, so they were getting more noticed as well, so it was sort of floating around a bit more in your head.
Yeah.
And also it's like I said, because you had the Crash Bandicoot stuff, so what's an Australian thing that's interesting that hasn't been done to death? Mm-hmm. We don't do a kangaroo, we don't do a koala, you want to avoid that sort of stuff. So I was like, well, what's left? It's like, well, you have this extinct Tasmanian tiger, that's kind of cool. And then you'd look up more info and it's like, oh wow, they're really interesting, they can jump, they got the pouch, they have the jaw that unhinges. Like, it just opens up really wide. It's like, well, that's all perfect stuff for a game.
Yeah. And of course,
historically, there were known to as shorts. So, that
was and throw boomerangs.
That's all there. All their history.
Yes.
But
little known fact.
Which sort of brings us to the whole thing we're doing this month, where we're the Tasmanian Devils. We did Bilby's last year, Tasmanian Devils. Mm-hmm. We're trying to actually, like, hey, there's other stuff that's still around. It's like, we don't want that stuff to go extinct.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So it sort of ties in with, we got a character that's about, he's not quite extinct.
Mm-hmm.
Let's stop this other stuff from, being endangered. So we're trying to help out there every year with some, like I said, this year's Tasmanian Devils. Previous 2 years was the Bilbies, Save the Bilby Fund stuff.
Yeah. So, oh, that's awesome. Talking about the Switch version now, because I've had a chance to actually get my hands onto that on Tai 4, which is awesome. And it's really smooth. The animation is lovely. And I was just wondering about the improvements, I guess, between that original version and this Switch version.
Mostly just keeping it at a good frame rate, because PC, it's a bit iffy of like what your hardware is going to be. There was a whole bunch of different hardware that even the Windows 8 version had to support. With the Switch, it's like, you get a locked off frame rate. You know the hardware. It's going to be 720p on a dock. It's going to be 1080p handheld. Much easier to make it work nicer. Most of the other stuff that we added to it is basically things like one of the biggest comments when we previously released it, like, there's no voiceover stuff. It's really, it was just silent text box stuff because it was cheap.
Yeah.
The cutscenes were just static frames originally. Yeah. So what we decided to do was this one is like we got all the voice actors together. Like, we had to cast some new voices, got a whole bunch of the old ones we get a hold of, and record all the audio. And it's like, it just jumps from, here's a good game to, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And that's us playing it like, this is great.
Yeah. It does make a huge difference. Yeah.
And absolutely. Then the cutscenes we did, basically reanimated. They were just going to be basically simple sliding motion graphics. It's like, oh, we got the voices now. I should probably just lip sync it a little bit. And they got a blank. So we started getting it's not really full on over the top animation, but it is nice that it's like, it's stuff's happening. It's simple. You get action going on. It's not just static screens. And it just feels a lot more visual and exciting to watch and stuff when stuff's moving across the screen as voice goes and the music's playing. So
totally. Yeah.
That was a big change.
With the actual soundtrack itself, how do you build that?
Soundtrack's a weird one because you've got to either sit down and just write, a melody and some chords and in the sort of genre you want, or you sort of just feel it out, like picking at the acoustic guitar or on the keyboard or something until you come up with something. So Tai never really had a do it like this sort of thing. It was when I started off, I came up with a Tai theme at the which was quite slow. And there was always some, because this was one of my very first, well, my first big project as a composer. And the publishers we were talking to weren't sort of sure. And they sent us some reference for another platform game where, it, well, I won't name it, but it's very fast-paced with, the thing I always remembered, it had very, very fast tambourine accompaniment, right? Mm-hmm. So I took that tune that I had, sped it up a lot, and just put the tambourine on top with a... it's actually two beats. There's a techno beat and then there's just a simple rock drum beat overlaid together with just acoustic guitar. And that was literally, oh, well, now we have the theme for Tyler Tasman. We're going to go and do this, go off and do, you know, 50 music tracks in the next year.
Yeah, right. Wow. Cool.
So the first game sort of had a very eclectic sort of style. There was a bit of this, a bit of that. But what sort of stuck... And what also proved to be much more manageable when you had to create a lot of music in a short frame of time was this sort of semi-country country rock feel.
Yeah.
That sort of became the signature for Ty. But because I can't leave well enough alone, there's also out of nowhere, you know, brass and synthesizers in different songs. So the, if you say, what's the sound of Ty, it's like, there's very eclectic.
So thank you to Chrome Studios for your time, and I hope listeners enjoyed hearing from them about the game. The rest of the interview will be available on our website at purenintendo.com, so please head over and check it out, and you'll find out more about this interesting studio and their classic series. Moving on to another release that we heard about during the week, which is coming out this week, and that is another entry into the Switch Online catalog. And it's a Game Boy Advance title from 2004, Kirby and the Amazing Mirror, which everyone seems to be pretty excited about. What do you know about this game, Kirk? Do you know anything about Kirby and the Amazing Mirror?
Not this particular game, no. But I found that the Kirby games that I have played from the Game Boy Advance, I just feel like the gameplay was so perfectly suited for that system. So I will try this one out because I like the way these games look and feel on the Game Boy Advance. So hopefully it's a good match and hopefully they enjoy it.
Yeah, hopefully. I agree. Kirby games in general are really, really fun and cute and clever as well. And I love that they all seem to have a slightly different, I don't know, kind of adventure to them. Like, they're not all just the same, you know, you're not always just doing the same thing. Yeah,
they always have like some kind of unique angle to them that changes up the gameplay and the look enough to make them, I mean, they're still very much Kirby games, right? But they're separated enough that you know immediately what you're playing, like, as opposed to like some games where you hop in and it could be any game in the series.
Exactly. And this one is some sort of Metroidvania kind of style for Kirby. Like, there's a maze layout. It's very much based on multiplayer. I think you can have four different Kirbys playing together. So I haven't played it, but I would love to give it a go. I've definitely heard of it. It was released in Australia. So it's been out 2004. It came out kind of worldwide. So it's almost 20 years, really, since this one first was released. And it should make a really nice addition to that collection of Game Boy Advance titles. And I agree, the Game Boy Advance, I loved that system because it was like a portable Super Nintendo, like in look, you know, as that 16-bit style. So I really enjoyed the games that were put out on it. So that'll be interesting to get into during the week. So now you've got two games. You've got F-Zero 99 and Kirby and the Amazing Mirror.
Yeah, and what'll happen is you'll ask me next week and I will have not played either one. What? I will make a concerted effort to actually follow through this time.
Okay, please do. You may not get to this one. It doesn't come out till the 29th, which is Friday. Okay. So it depends if we record on Friday night. You may not even have a chance to, but maybe you will. So let's see how we go. Yeah, so that one comes out the 29th, Friday the 29th of September. I'm hoping Trev will have had a chance to play it because I know he's a big Kirby fan. And he might have something to say about it next week. So we'll see how that goes. I wanted to give a bit of a wrap up of something we talked about quite a few weeks ago, which was Super Bomberman R2. And you had the pleasure of going to the Konami event at the time and getting some hands-on time with the game before it came out. Now it is out, and I've just finished my review of it. So just wanted to give a bit of an update on that. And the review will be published on it'll be on the website by the time this episode launches. And I really enjoyed it. And there's two sides to Super Bomberman. I think, as everyone knows, the multiplayer mode is kind of where most people find themselves, because I liken it to Mario Kart in that it's so addictive. It's not like Mario Kart, like you're not driving, obviously, but it's just got that same addictive quality and that same kind of, it brings out that competitive side to you. So if for some reason you've never played Bomberman before, it's like a top-down style in a grid sort of maze format. And in multiplayer mode, you sort of start off in each corner of the grid, and you have to be the last man standing, basically. So you have to blow up your friends with bombs. And I love the juxtaposition that the game presents, which is they're really cute characters. They're like little space people, you know, little astronauts. Yeah.
Yeah, with their little round helmets and
big
visors.
Mm-hmm. And they're very, very cute. And I know you mentioned the cutscenes weren't necessarily to your liking in that.
That was more in the story mode, was it?
Yes, that's more the story mode, yeah. But to give you an idea, of the cuteness, I suppose, it's very much the cutscenes in the story mode, it's very much like a little cartoon, very, very cutesy style, like an anime, but not like an adult anime, more like a kiddie anime. But, you know, as I got into it, and so moving to story mode, I guess, the story mode is the other side of the series, but the multiplayer mode is very, very easy to recommend. If you've played it, you'll know exactly what I mean. It's super fun, super addictive, super competitive. You know, feelings can get hurt if you're not the last one standing, I don't know. But we have a good time. We've always had a good time playing Bomberman.
So they have different multiplayer modes, right?
They do. They do.
Games you can play.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of the other great things about the battle mode, the multiplayer mode, is that you can customize it to your liking. Like you can choose the layout, you can choose the time, you can choose whether certain things are toggled on and off. Like there's things called skulls, which are like negative power-ups. You can choose whether they're on or off. You can choose whether there's these little creatures called Louis, who are a little bit like Yoshis that you can ride around. So you can choose whether they're on or off. You can there's so much you can do to customize it, which is really great. And you can really make it your own game. And on top of that, there are different modes. There's kind of the standard mode where you're just in an arena with four people and you have to make your way to the center or whatever and blow each other up. There's also, this new castle mode, which is a very different take on how to play. And I had a little trouble getting into this because to be honest, it's chaotic. It's just, I don't know if you tried this when you played.
I did.
Yeah. I don't know what you thought of it. It took me a while to get into it. So I tried it during the battle mode with my family, and we just did not know what was going on. It was just like, what are we doing? Like, you have to get a key to unlock a treasure chest. That seems fine. There's like two sides. There's an attacking side who has to get the key, and there's a defending side who has to protect the treasure chests. That all sounds very logical and easy. But there's just these things called, what are they called? They're not traps. They're, I can't remember the word for it. There's traps basically that, gadgets, I think they're called gadgets, but they're, you know, they're bombs that fly through the air and land randomly next to you. There's little things sort of hovering around that get in your way. There's these laser beams. There's protective shields. There's just so much happening. And it's like, I can't get to the key. I don't even know where the key is. Where's the key? I'm just trying to find the key. So it's just full on. What made it easier for me, excuse me, was the story mode, actually. So when I did the story mode, you kind of have to do the castle mode as part of the story. And it's a lot easier. They sort of break it right down to the simplest version of the castle mode, where there aren't all these crazy things going on. It's just you, and you start off as the protector, like the defender. And so you're defending these treasure chests, and the enemy, which is AI enemy, is trying to get the key and get to you. And you just have to blow them up, basically. And there's like five treasure chests. So as long as they don't get five of them, you win if they get.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes it a little bit easier. And then as you sort of proceed through the story, and this is not the complete story, it's just kind of every now and then you have to ambush the enemy. So you're kind of moving through areas and eventually it's like, oh, the enemy is ready to attack or whatever. So you have to ambush them and you have to do a chaos mode level, so to speak. And it did help. It did make me kind of appreciate it a little bit more compared to trying it out in battle mode with people who hadn't tried it before, and we just did not know. We had no clue. So that was one thing to keep in mind, I suppose. Having said that, also the story mode, you know, most people, like I said, know Bomberman for its multiplayer mode, for the battle mode. I had a lot of fun with the story mode. I actually really enjoyed it. The sort of setup is, and I think, did you find this out during the event as well, what the story mode was?
Yes, I'm trying to think of how far I got. Yeah, because I did the story mode and there was the planet, right? You crash land mm-hmm. on a planet and then you kind of went out and started exploring and trying to find the little flame guys who you said.
Yeah. The Elons. Yeah, little squishy aliens. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was kind of collecting them and they were following me around in a trail and working my way through mazes and trying to get to different areas.
Yeah. So it's very open. It, you know, usually from my memory anyway, the story mode is kind of like battle mode in that you're in an arena. It might be extended, it might be longer or wider, but it's still a maze and you still have to get through it and you still have to defeat enemies. This is very open. You can walk kind of freely, and then there are little sections with blocks that you have to blow up, and there's traps and things, and there's enemies obviously, and then there's these little squishy aliens trapped in blocks that you have to find and rescue, and there's 100 to get per planet, and there are 3 planets to explore. So I love collecting things. So for me, collecting all 100 of the squishy aliens was like a really fun kind of challenge to do.
Do you have to keep them all alive?
Well, it says that, but no, you don't. Okay. So you can have, yeah, you don't, which would be really challenging because it's kind of annoying. When you find one, it follows you. Mm-hmm. And you can have up to 5 follow you. And then, you know, if they get blown up, which they do very easily because they're following you, and obviously when you're trying to avoid bomb blasts, sometimes you just miss it, but they're behind you, so they don't miss it. they die. But they don't actually die. They just get sent back to your camp, so they're fine. You don't lose your 100. They're just – and if okay. you need – because sometimes you need them with you to open up things. Like some of the Elons are locked in little puzzles. And to unlock the puzzles, you need Elons. So say you might need 2 or 4 Elons traveling with you to open the puzzle. And if you don't have any with you, you can go back to your base camp, pick up a few Elons, just don't let them die until you get to the section where you need to unlock the thing. And then it's unlocked and you can play the puzzle. And the puzzles, actually, speaking of them, they're a nice little distraction from just blowing up enemies and blowing up bricks. They're kind of like very quick little levels where you have to do something within a time limit, or you have to use only 2 bombs in certain places to unlock the aliens, like the Elons. They're very fun. I like them. I enjoyed them. You kind of have to use your brain a little bit more. They are puzzles. So in one, it's like it gives you a clue, like the name of the puzzle is kind of a clue. And I'm sitting there thinking about what am I doing? I've got 3 bombs. There's nothing to blow up. There's no enemies. I can't see anything. And it's like a mirror mode, and it's kind of showing you via a sort of a top screen that you can't access. There's something different in 3 places. And so those in your bottom area where you're walking around, you have to place bombs in those sections, and you hear a little chime that says, ding, you've done it correctly when you put the bomb there. So it's like that. It's like little puzzles where you have to place bombs in certain spots or run through a maze in a certain time limit and collect these little things. It's just a nice little distraction from the main game anyway.
Yeah, and I like it when games do that because I think the single player mode helps you build knowledge of how to do it, little tricks, mm-hmm. things that you don't have to keep dying in multiplayer mode over and over and over and over again to learn.
Exactly, yes.
I think that helps. So
totally, yeah. Yeah, and it does, and that's exactly the case with the castle mode. I feel a lot more comfortable playing it now. It's still crazy and chaotic, but at least I understand what on earth I'm doing. So, and the good thing is in castle mode, you don't, you know, normally in battle mode, when you die, you leave the game. You can turn on revenge cards. That's a whole separate thing. But in castle mode, if you are destroyed by a bomb, you just respawn. It kind of does a little countdown, like a little 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then you're back. So you kind of get chances, multiple chances to complete the mission to sort of get the key and get the treasure. I don't know if it's going to be my favorite mode. I think the classic mode, and I said this in my review, the classic level is always the first one you see in battle mode for a reason, because it just, it's so much fun. It's like, yeah, it works. It works well. But, you know, I love that they're trying new things. I really do. The series has evolved. It's 40 years old now. It's come a long way and it looks great. So honestly, if you're a Bomberman fan, I definitely recommend it. It's not a cheap game, I suppose you could say, but it is fun. And there's a lot of content. So there's plenty there to keep you busy. The story mode, it's decent length. I think I probably took maybe 4 or 5 hours per planet, and there's 3 planets. So you're looking at about 15 hours worth of gameplay, I suppose, yeah. Especially if you want to collect all the Elons, and there's 300 in total. So, yeah.
No, I think that's exactly in line with what I expected based on it was about a half hour, 45 minutes, maybe up to an hour I played it at the event. So
yeah, right.
I'm glad to hear that it was fun and carries itself well throughout much longer gameplay.
The
story mode being only about 15 hours, I think, is a little disappointing, but maybe not, because I think most people, like you said, are going to focus on the multiplayer. And so that's about right for you to get comfortable or play with on your own when you don't have people to play with or don't feel like being that competitive.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll certainly get much more time out of it than 15 hours because
there's
so many options in multiplayer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. The multiplayer is really good. It also has online. It also has tournaments as well, like F-Zero does. So I think this is the one I was thinking of. It's a very long tournament. I think it lasts until January. So, I guess there's plenty of time to get in and skill up and kind of compete with people around the world and have fun with that. And you can also build your own levels too. So there is also that aspect to it. So there's definitely a lot of content going on there. Yeah, it's good. I did find myself, I was just so surprised. Like I've always enjoyed the single player mode in Bomberman games in the past, but I just was surprised that I enjoyed this one so much. I kept wanting to play it, which I think is a good sign. When you want to, you know, especially when you're reviewing a title and you're like, oh, I'm kind of done with this game. But I really wanted to keep going and get all 100 Elons. I was like really motivated to do that. So, yeah, I think that's a great. Good sign. Anyway, let's move on. A couple of interesting things to talk about. And the first one, we've talked about Lego before. I think you know I'm a bit of a Lego fan. My kids are huge Lego fans. I just noticed during the week that there is a Piranha Plant Lego set coming out. And I'm saying the word set this time, so you know I'm not talking about a game.
Well, wouldn't that be bizarre? They released Mario Lego game for the Switch, and it's based entirely on Piranha Plant.
I would love that. Yes, but this is a set, and it's not part of the Mario Lego series. It's like a really, it's like a, what do they call it? They call it adult Lego, but it's like just, it's not like it's for adults only. It's just slightly harder, I guess, and it's more like a collector's series. You know, kind of like they've got those consoles now. Like you've got the NES, right? And you've got the Atari, I think, that you can build out of Lego, and it's more for display. It doesn't do anything. It looks cool, and you put it on your shelf or you put it on your display cabinet, whatever it is. And this is the case with the Piranha Plant. It's like a display model. It looks really nice. It's really cool looking, and you know, it's a slightly bigger set. I don't think it's not one of those crazy expensive sets that's like $1,000 or anything. I think this one comes in at under 100. So it's reasonable for Lego, I suppose. And it comes out on 6th of November. So I just thought I'd bring that up because it is kind of an iconic, you know, Mario themed design, the Piranha Plant. And it looks really cool. If you haven't seen it, just Google it. It looks really, really cool. It's, you know, the green plant coming out of the green pipe. And it, yeah. Anyway, I thought that was interesting.
What, and I just had a good idea, and I'm sorry, I don't think they would ever do this, but what they should do is release all of the major visual attractions for Super Nintendo World in Lego form.
Oh, yeah.
So you could take Piranha Plant and you could take all the other elements and just build your own Super Nintendo World and put that on display.
Oh, wow.
And even cooler if they make them move battery powered or something so that the whole place is like animated the way Super Nintendo World is. In Universal theme park. So
yeah,
I don't know who's listening at Nintendo, but get on that. And I think that's going to go over pretty well.
Yeah, that is an awesome idea. I love that. I can see people getting into that. And it's like, you can design it yourself, right? So you can set it up to the standard layout that the current Super Nintendo World is set up, but you could also just move it around and create it your own way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe solve any of the line problems. Or
yes. Yeah. And then Nintendo could send your submission to Nintendo and they can review it for the next Super Nintendo World that they build somewhere, wherever that is.
When they get started on Florida. Are they putting one in Florida? I think
they're putting one in Florida. I don't know. I don't know. I would like to know if there's one coming to Australia. Maybe. Maybe not. That would be cool, though. Yeah, so if you're a Lego fan, check that out because it's coming out November the 6th. I think, you know, coming up into a very Mario period of the year with Mario Wonder coming out and Mario RPG coming out, Mario Kart DLC coming out in December. So, yeah, why not have some more Mario love in Lego form? next that we want to talk about was Crosstales, the demo, which is now available. What do we know about this one?
This is a game that I reviewed. We talked about it podcast maybe a month or two ago. Mm-hmm. It's a Kemco game. It's a strategy, turn-based tactical strategy game with mm-hmm. sort of like the isometric top-down view. It's grid-based. You're getting higher, trying to find higher ground using various characters with different weapons. And the only reason I bring it up is because at the time the game came out, it did not have a demo. And I felt that it really should have one. I think I mentioned it on the podcast, but maybe not, because mm-hmm. most people, when they think of Kemco, get a very specific style game in mind. Sort of like they tend to focus on the throwback NES, SNES, sort of JRPG style games, the old Final Fantasies, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And this one was quite a bit different. So I just wanted to let everyone know that the demo is out there. And it's worth a shot. I enjoyed it. I gave it 7.5 out of 10. Mm-hmm. I had quite a bit of fun with it. And especially if you played, and I know I mentioned this before, there was a game called God Wars. Again, not God of War, God Wars, that's available for the Nintendo Switch. And it very much has that look and feel to it. So if you enjoyed that game came from Kodokawa, I believe was the publisher of that. But yeah. Crosstales is worth a shot. The game is only $30 on its own, but mm-hmm. get the demo, download it, and it should take you through probably the first few battles. And it's a good game. I do recommend it.
Yeah, I do. I remember you talking about it, and I remember the visuals. It does look. I love the style of it. It looks really interesting. It's kind of a isometric top down perspective, and mm-hmm. The characters all look really neat. I think, are they some sort of cat creature? They have cat
names. Actually, it's very much a dog versus cat.
Oh, okay.
Right. You have one group of people who are more canine influenced. Mm-hmm. Now, they all look like people and they just have tails and ears. Mm-hmm. But on one side, the tails and the ears are dogs, and the other side, the tails and the ears are cats. But the game also lets you play both perspectives.
Oh,
so,
cool.
You play as one and you'll go all the way through the story. And there are times when the stories intersect, but then when you're done, you can go through and play the other point of view and you get, sometimes the battles are the same, but for the most part, it's a completely separate story, different battle, and you're just getting it from a different perspective.
Oh, that's cool. Did you choose a side? Who did you prefer? The cats
or
the dogs?
I knowing I was going to play them both, I went through until I got to a point where the stories intersected. And then I would bounce over to a different save game and play the other side till I got to that point. So rather than push all the way through, I kind of got to the meeting points and then went back and played through it that way.
That's a good way to do it. Then there's no spoilers, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I think there wouldn't really be spoilers the way they set it up. You're not. I think it just provides a different take on it, really.
Sure. So there's not really an antagonist and a protagonist. They both have sides that you could understand. Is that right?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. If you, no matter how you play through it, I think the intersection between the two races becomes clear. And
cool. And, yeah. It just reminds me, we just watched The Cat Returns on Netflix last night, and they look like, have you seen that? It's a Studio Ghibli movie where the girl goes into the cat kingdom and she starts turning into a cat. So the girl with the cat ears looks like her a little bit. Just reminds me of that. Yeah. Is that why it's called cross tails? Because they're cross breeds, you know, and they have tails. I don't know.
Yes. Yeah. And tails is spelled like the animal tail. So it's very much a play on words there. But yeah.
Oh, that looks good. I might have to check out the demo. Yeah. That's interesting. Very cool. Thank you. Yes. If listeners have played it also, we'd love to know your thoughts on it. Have you enjoyed it as much as Kirk? have you tried the demo or the full game? Let us know. We've got a few minutes left, so would you like to talk about some other games you're playing at the moment?
Yes, there are two games I'm playing, one of which is kind of, I will say it's more dear to me, simply because we talked about F-Zero earlier, and I mentioned how I don't have the history with that. That's because my history of early gaming was before the NES. I was participating in getting into video games at the time when Atari versus Intellivision was the big battle.
Who won that battle?
With me, it was Intellivision.
Okay.
I was one of the few, I guess. Most people preferred Atari.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
But there was a game for the Intellivision system called Shark Shark, which I owned. Mm-hmm. It was never my favorite game on the system, but there was a while ago where the Intellivision company was going to release a new system called the Amico. I won't get into the whole history of that because it's never going to happen, and I'm out $100 on my deposit. but the after everything that went wrong with that, it looks like some of the companies that were developing games are now going to for the Amico are now releasing them for other systems.
Cool.
Shark Shark was going to be an Amico game, and it is now coming out for Nintendo Switch.
Right. Okay.
So I got a hold of that. I'm not sure exactly what the release date is yet. I know it's within the next week or two. But,
yeah, it doesn't even say online, actually. It just says releases 2023.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. But this is a game where it's kind of a more gentle game, despite the screaming of the shark. But you're a fish. You're a small fish, and the whole premise is you just kind of swim around the screen, and you eat fish that are smaller than you. Bigger fish you just kind of bump off of, and occasionally a shark will come in, and you have to avoid the shark. That's the whole game.
Okay.
I'm sure they're going to do more with it. I haven't played beyond the first area yet. You know, like sometimes eels come in, and you can't eat them. Despite the size, because they're electric. So you have to wait till they're not charged before you eat them. There's co-op, or I shouldn't say co-op. You can play, you have to eat 30 fish in order to advance, at least early on. You have 5 lives. So if a shark does eat you, eventually your bones become scales again, and then you're able to continue swimming. If you're playing it with other people, and you can play with up to 4, you can decide whether you're allowed to eat the other players.
And
that's important because my kids would just, you know, constantly attack each other, and there would be yelling and screaming, and no game would ever be finished. So if they could just focus on, you know, doing their own thing and just avoiding the shark, then they'll be fine. So it's exciting to me because I want to see more of these games that were going to be on the Miko eventually hit. I know the same company, I believe, is going to release Astro Smash, which is one of the bigger Intellivision games of all time. It was never one of my favorite, but I have seen the way it was going to look on the Amico, so I'm very eager to try that one out too. And you know, just a nice throwback for me to be able to play this game that I am used to seeing in, 8-bit, 16-bit, 2-bit, whatever the Intellivision was back in the day.
Yeah, this one looks quite colorful and... I don't know, almost cute, really. But it looks realistic. Like you look like real fish, just in a very
It's more of a family style game. I think it's you know, you're not going to want to really, if you're a hardcore gamer, probably bypass this one.
But yeah.
like gentle action and nice, pretty graphics, then you'll find it here. Yeah. Although I do say it's too bad, and I understand that they weren't going to do this, but I would have liked it if they put a bonus in there where they had the visuals of the original and television version playable as an option, and it is not.
I do like when they do that as well.
Yeah.
So just a quick question. When you are a fish eating other fish, do you get bigger?
Yes, you do.
Okay, cool.
Because you have to maybe it's every 5 fish you eat, you grow in size a little bit, and that allows you to eat even larger fish. So that's part of the progression.
Cool.
The drawback to that is the bigger you are, the easier it is for the shark to get you because you're taking up more space.
True. And are you slower when you're bigger or no, that doesn't affect things?
I don't think so. I think your speed remains the same.
Okay. And can you, are you ever big enough to eat a shark?
No.
No, okay.
No, at least not where I am yet and not in the original game. It could be there. We'll see if I get far enough, but I don't think so. And the sharks, you know, they look friendly, like the big cartoon sharks from like Finding Nemo or something like that.
Yeah, so it does look like Bruce the shark, actually.
No blood, no bones, nothing.
Yeah.
It's as animals eating animals, it's as presented as cute as it can be.
Oh, that sounds really fun. Yeah, it looks cool. I'm glad they have the option to turn off the eating each other mechanic because, yeah, I can imagine that would be a little competitive with kids.
Yeah.
That's a good option. Anything else that you're playing at the moment that you wanted to talk about?
I'm going to quickly mention Silent Hope. It's another game that's coming out soon. It's being released by Marvelous. This is, I'll have more on this, I think, within the weeks to come as I'm reviewing it and probably won't be done with it by then. But this is a game where the premise is that all the words have been taken out of this world that they're in. The king of the area took all the words with them and fell down into an abyss, and nobody was able to talk for a very long time, which is a great idea for developers because it means you don't have to pay a whole lot of voice actors.
True.
But after a while, some sounds came back out and the princess is able to speak again, and she gathers these warriors of different types who are going to go down into the abyss and fight their way through and eventually save the king. So the most of it is dungeon exploration, and it's very linear. It's not like a big open world. You're kind of following a path, but it's kind of a roguelite, I guess I'll say, because as you're fighting, you're acquiring more materials, you take them back up and you're able to build more weapons to level up so you can go back down and go further in. But the one thing I really like is when you're down in a level, you can choose from any of the characters from the start. I believe there are eight. When you're down in a level, sometimes there will be these crystals that allow you to either go back up if you're not doing well or switch to a different character. You can only do it once per level, but if you are about to go into a battle where you see, let's say a big bomb in the middle of a bunch of enemies and you happen to have a melee, I don't know how to say that, and I'll never get it right.
Yeah, melee, I think. Yeah.
fighter, then that's not the best way to do it. So you can switch to someone who's more ranged attack, like the magic user or the archer. And so you can hit the bomb, take a bunch of people out at once. And of course, if one of the characters isn't doing well as far as health goes, then you can just swap at least once to a new person and be able to continue throughout. So it's not as frustrating as some roguelites are in that regard. But I started playing it, and at first I wasn't really getting into it, but about another hour or two, I sort of got into the flow, and now I'm enjoying it quite a bit. So I'm looking forward to pushing further and talking more about it in the future.
Yeah, it looks interesting. I love the concept, and the animation style looks good. And it looks like that one's out, is it the 3rd of October?
October.
Yeah. Cool.
And it's got a very cute design, very colorful. It's got these chibi-like characters, you know, with the big heads and the very, you know, kind of basic bodies. But even though they don't talk, they still manage to have some decent personality.
Yeah. Oh, that's clever.
The way the game's done. Yep.
Yeah. That's really cool. And there's a demo for that one too, by the looks of it. So from what I'm seeing in the eShop,
Yeah, if you do get the demo, stick with it a little bit. Don't just go down into the abyss a couple times and think that's it. It does get more involved. Each of the characters has a job, And as you get the materials down in the abyss and then work your way, or I should say, you just warp back up. You don't work your way back up. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, there's a cook and there's a farmer and there's a metal worker and those kind of things. So as you go back up with the materials, you build more stuff, you create more items, and then that's how you're able to level up your armor and your weapons. And of course, you find better weapons down there, and then you can attach items to them to give them additional powers. So there's an awful lot to do, but never so overwhelming that you feel like you've made too many mistakes and now your character's not going to be properly optimized.
Yeah, brilliant. Cool. Yeah, it looks really good. I look forward to hearing your full thoughts on that one over the coming weeks. But yeah, that's awesome. Thank you, Kirk. Yep. I think that about brings us to the end of the show. So anything else you had to add before we close things off?
Nope, I don't think so. Except a couple demos, as we mentioned, go try them out and apparently watch an episode of Bluey.
Yeah, it's on Disney Plus, I'm pretty sure. It's on local TV because it's a local show. So I don't have to watch it on Disney Plus, but I think in America, yeah. It's on Disney Plus. So yeah, check it out. But yes, thank you so much for joining me this week, Kirk. And thank you, listeners, for joining us again. And we hope you enjoy the show. We'd love to know your thoughts. So please let us know if you're watching this on YouTube, send us a comment, ask us a question. We'll answer it next week. Leave us a review on one of the podcast channels, or you can always like and subscribe on YouTube as well, so you don't miss out on any episodes. Thank you very, very much. And until next week, game on, everybody. Bye.